Welcome to the Lush Speakeasy, a series of conversations that aims to create a temporary space where a small group of us can essentially hang out and discuss a subject. Not a historical event or a famous figure from the past, but a word or a short phrase, one that will in all likelihood mean something different to each of us and which will hopefully take us off in unexpected directions. That's the plan anyway. My name is Charlie Moores and I have the pleasure of hosting this programme and introducing today's guests in strict alphabetical order. They will be, ironically, discussing silence. So this episode's guests. Kate Farragher, founder and CEO of Bespoke Skills, has over 20 years' experience coaching, consulting and training senior executives in national and international FTSE 100 companies, as well as at the House of Commons. She trained with some of the top voice coaches in the country, is a fully qualified executive and business coach, and is constantly challenging herself on lots of other courses. I think you said before we started this, Kate, that you were a course junkie.
I stopped myself.
Alison Goldie is an actor, theatre director, writer, coach and teacher, running classes on a variety of subjects, including drama, comedy, creative writing and confidence building. And her book, The Improv Book, Improvisation for Theatre, Comedy, Education and Life, was published in 2015 by Oberon Books and has received unanimously positive reviews. Susie Hackney is head gift designer at Lush and knows a thing or two about having to come up with exceptional ideas on a daily basis. And in offices, if you don't mind me saying so, Susie, as I know this building well, where silence seems to be somewhat at a premium. She says that however you go about your own creative process, trust in yourself, learn from others, and keep on looking for inspiration in the most unusual places. So three exceptional professionals, and if I don't come out of this a better, more creative person, I deserve to have my podcasting epaulets torn off and jumped up and down on, frankly. Anyway, silence. Is silence golden or is it uncomfortable? Something menacing to be filled immediately or a sanctuary where creativity and thinking can flower? Is silence a welcome retreat or, if you're on a stage with hundreds of people waiting for you to inform and entertain them, the loneliest sound in the world? Is silence a sign of powerlessness or a sign of strength? Does a well-timed pause speak louder than a gap stuffed full of meaningless words? We are going to find out. But can I start by asking you all, though, have you ever experienced complete silence, and what did it feel like? Kate, let's start with you.
I asked my husband, who studied sound engineering, if there was such a thing as scientific silence, because I'm quite curious about it. And he said there is, and there's this thing called the anechoic chamber, I think I've said it right, and that is a place where they try to suck out all the sound. And you can go to it allegedly in London at UCL. I've not been, and to be honest with you, I find silence quite difficult. I'm an extrovert, I like talking, but I'm also a coach, so I kind of have to get comfortable with it. So I've got this kind of juxtaposition, but because I've been a voiceover artist and worked in radio for like years, the closest I've ever got to an anechoic chamber is a radio studio. And actually they can be quite oppressive because of that lack of echo. So, yeah. So I quite often grab for the headphones to have some rustling sound.
Well, we haven't got silence in here.
No.
Because of these bare brick walls.
Thank goodness.
It just tends to echo.
Yeah, which feels much more comfortable.
It does, doesn't it? Alison.
Yeah, actually, I have experienced a great silence in the middle of Australia. About 20 years ago, I had a brief stint as a TV presenter, and I was presenting for a travel show on BBC Two, which everyone always goes, oh my God, that's the best job ever, which in some ways it is, and of course in other ways it's really hard work and difficult and getting up really early in the mornings and so on. But no, great experience. And the project was to go from the top to the bottom of Australia, from Darwin in the north to Adelaide in the south, by various different means of transport. So we went by sort of Land Rover and hot air balloon and little plane, and then this wonderful train called the GAN train, which goes down the middle of Australia. And it takes 54 hours to go from north to south. We didn't stay on it for 54 hours. We were just on it for a short portion of the journey, maybe 2 or 3 hours. And the GAN train, it's short for Afghan train, which was what the camels used to be called when they were sort of taken across the true desert, not the Australian desert. So the GAN train is this incredibly plush, really expensive and beautiful train that goes down the middle. At one point, this was all unplanned. I didn't really expect this to happen, or nobody told me, because I was merely the presenter and not anybody important. The train stopped in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of the night, and we got off. And I was sort of, what are we doing to the crew? And they said, oh, right, we're getting off here, and we're going to wait a little while, and someone's going to come and pick us up and take us to the next point of departure or place to stay, whatever. So in the middle of the night, in the middle of the desert, with nothing around, we just lay on the railway tracks because we knew there was no train coming for another 24 hours or something, looked up at the stars, and it was completely silent. It was absolutely amazing. The desert can be, you know, super quiet. And we can't, you know, in this country, it's extremely hard to find anywhere where you don't hear traffic sound.
Yeah. I went down to Hastings a couple of weeks ago at the weekend, and we had a hotel, and it was right on the seafront. It was, you know, it doesn't often happen, does it? So we opened the window, and during the night, we heard the waves coming in, and it was absolutely beautiful hearing the waves. And then all of a sudden, I'd hear a car go past, and actually, the sound sounded quite similar. But the quality of the sound was different.
Yeah.
One made me feel enriched and the other one made me feel kind of like, oh, tense, you know. And it's that juxtaposition for me that's really curious about silence. One is, you know, opposing and the other one is very enriching. And it's finding for me those two qualities and searching for the enrichment, you know, and that challenge of finding the enrichment in silence and sort of pushing away the opposition.
Well, there's the two meanings. I was thinking when we were given this word.
Your homework.
Yes, exactly. Not that there was a great deal of homework done, I have to say, because it suddenly seemed like a huge subject. So I thought, I haven't got time for this. I'm going to busk it. I am an improviser after all. The beauty of silence in nature and the need for silence, as opposed to all the rackety noise from technology that we have now and the sort of stresses of the modern workplace and so on. I think we need silence more than ever, I'd suggest, in the modern world. But then there's the problem of being silenced and what happens when people aren't allowed to speak and to have a voice and how terribly oppressive that is. So it seems to me that we can talk about silence as a very positive thing today and also as an appalling negative thing.
I mean, for me, there are three types of silence. That's kind of what I've thought about. That for me, there's a quality of silence, that quality of the sound, what we sense through our senses. But there's also a state of silence. And for me, that's the one that I find quite enriching and challenging. But that state is one, you know, where your gut feels silent, your heart feels silent, and your head feels silent. You know, it doesn't often happen, but almost like a meditation. And for me, it is a state. Mm-hmm. And I suppose when we first got the word, that was the one that I was exploring. But then recently been thinking about that, the fear of silence, the fact that, you know, we as women have been silenced and oppressed. And for me, that there's those three things. But the bit around the state of silence, that was the one that kind of initially I grabbed onto, because I went, right, I want to go on a silent retreat. And then, oh, I don't want to go to silence. And my friend has been on a 10-day one. And
I've got friends who've done that. Is it a
terrifying?
Vipassana.
Yes.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And it's like being in that chamber, I think. It's like that place of torture, you know, like, get me out of here. I need to speak, you know. So I couldn't go on this 10-day retreat because I was too busy. So my friend said, do you want to go to one of these gong baths? And I was like, oh, that sounds great. Mm. And then it made me...
What's a gong bath? I've never heard of that.
Because I'm now addicted. It is absolutely amazing.
Yeah, I want to go.
Have you been?
I've had them as part of a yoga thing before, but not like on its own thing.
Well, no, yeah, this was a sort of women's circle thing. So we all, okay. And we were all silent together and then hearing each other. And then at the end, they did this gong bath, which basically... She said that you can go into deep meditation. So it's quite interesting. It's like this not silent at all. So it made me think that silence can be very loud. Because this gong was pretty loud, you know. And I was, when it first hit the gong, I was like, oh, this isn't going to work. And then like 2 seconds was like, ah.
Because it sort of reverberates and you feel the resonance through your body, don't you?
Yeah. And allegedly it sort of connects in with your sort of deep level kind of resonance.
Sort of saying there's a big crossover there between silence and stillness when you're talking about states.
Yeah.
Maybe it's that state of being still that we're talking about here.
Well, I'm so happy that mindfulness has got such a lot of traction and popularity now because it seems like a really common sense sort of thing for us all to adopt. I hate it when people pour scorn on it or suggest that it's some sort of gimmick, because I'm very skeptical about a lot of sort of new age things, but I'm very into mindfulness and in fact did a course on it, which was on the NHS. This is remarkable, and I don't know if you could get this all around the country, but check it out, people. See if you can get mindfulness on the NHS. My doctor recommended it for a little condition that I've had a long time, and he thought maybe rather than giving me drugs and things, he could I could get to it through my psyche and give it a go. And it was absolutely lovely, this course. You just turn up in this room, and these two incredibly soft-spoken guys, one of whom was American and really, really spoke like that, really gentle, and then a really nice, quiet northern guy with a really quiet voice. And they would just talk you through really simple exercises, just one per week. Sometimes you'd walk in and there would be cushions all over the floor and you would just immediately lie down on the floor, and then they would take you on a little mindfulness journey. And the mission was, as you say, Kate, to silence the racket in the head.
Yeah.
But not to tell yourself off for having the racket in the head, but just to become aware of the racket in the head and then let it go, to attempt to reach this place of silence in yourself. And I'm not sure it's actually possible, although maybe some very enlightened monks sitting on mountains in Nepal or something can do it. But it's the
distraction or something.
The attempt is what's key, the process of trying it. And you do quieten the mind when you practice it regularly, she says, as if she practices it regularly.
I do think that silence is a little bit of an evaluation tool. If you can get there to that state of silence, it's a place where you, again, I go back to the sort of like evaluate your gut, how fearful am I? You've got to evaluate your heart, how open am I? And evaluate your head, like how distracted am I? You know, when I work in the places that I work in, you find that people don't evaluate how they're feeling or how they're thinking or how, and I think we have to have some kind of silence to be able to do that. And I think that if we're just, I mean, it's like everything, it's like diversity, you know, if you're unconscious bias, you know, if you are biased towards something, if you're stressed and not listening to yourself, you will make bad choices. And I think we all need to find those moments of silence somehow.
Absolutely, but because we're always going on our phones all the time and filling our world, I know this, and yet I'm really, I can really see how I've got addicted to the stupid phone. And I remember that I used to sit there on my own sometimes, just with a cup of tea or something, just staring into space. I mean, there was some incredibly wise guy, and I can't remember his name, some philosopher, or it might have been a writer, who said that one of the problems with humanity is that we can't just sit silently in a room. It's so true. I think we've lost that even more than ever.
I've got a friend who actually, when I was in the opening ceremony of the Olympics, she was in the second bed along from me, so I never really got that much to chat to, but we got on really well. And anyway, on Facebook, she put this thing saying, I've got my PhD, it's open for all for this short period of time. The word that she came up with was kinesthetic empathy. And even just that, like the empathy of the body. Mm. And for me, that's that state, you know, like that, you know, listening to your body, being in a room, listening to other people's bodies, you know. Mm. I can walk into a room, I bet you all of us could, and you can tell by the way they're sitting. There's an energy of the silence.
Yeah.
And I think there's also that energy in yourself that you need to hear and listen to. And I'm fascinated by that quality of silence. The quality of, well, I don't know what it is, the quality of something in the silence.
Now, an interesting thing about all of this is that we're really not used to silence from our earliest days. Even in the womb, we start to hear things, voices, our mother's heartbeat. In some sense, silence is almost unnatural to us.
And that's why it can be so frightening, isn't it? You know, that's why just before the monster jumps out in a horror movie, you can have real silence just beforehand.
Well,
and then
kind of silence.
That sort of eerie silence.
It's always that feeling of like you're hearing your heartbeat or hearing the blood to sort of like go around your ears.
And then you might get some music that emphasises that. Yeah. Those sounds, I suppose, that sort of... Exactly, the heart, that sort of heartbeat, sort of threatening sound,
yeah.
I've been watching Stranger Things on Netflix. And they have this great sound that's it's such a tiny, tiny sound when something horrible is going to happen. And it's such a small sound. It's just like there's like little sounds of like a twig cracking in the forest or a little sort of breath. And it's so small on the soundtrack. Yeah. But when you hit just these little... sounds, you know that the monster's gonna turn up any minute, and this terrifying.
Accents, sound effects.
This is incredible.
I can't laugh silently, that's for sure.
We do seem to need silence, yet it does unsettle us.
I think I think people do recognise the need for it if we can tear ourselves away from all the addictive stuff, and that's a big challenge for a lot of us. I mean, I've couple of nice sort of silent things I've done in sort of workshop context. Once was I went to a place in Oxfordshire run by an organisation called Brahma Kumaris, and they're a sort of non-denominational sort of spiritual group. And I'd been there actually when I was doing the TV presenting. We'd done three retreats, an item on three retreats. One of which was a convent, one of which was this Brahma Kumaris place, and one of which was a much more sort of New Age spa sort of place. And they all featured silence in one way or another. But my favourite was Brahma Kumaris, and I went back there just for a day. They do a day where you can learn mindfulness and meditation, and a feature of it is having a silent lunch. And the silent lunch was such a challenge because I don't think I'd ever had a meal in my life, barring one on my own. But even then, I might listen to the radio or read the paper or something while I'm eating. This was just eating your beautiful vegetarian Indian food in silence.
Were you even conscious of how you were eating?
Oh, absolutely.
Like,
exactly. Yeah. It was sort of, am I allowed to look at other people? Can we sort of, can I pull faces? Do something to communicate because I can't bear not communicating. But actually, after about 10 minutes, you totally get into the groove. And it just feels really easy to just sit there quietly. And then you really enjoy the food. You know, I tasted every mouthful of that meal. Just becomes a much more beautiful sort of sacred action rather than wolfing down a bunch of grub.
Have you ever done a silent disco? Have you ever done?
Yeah.
It's so much fun, isn't it? Especially when you take the headphones off. Especially if they've got different channels and one channel's like doing pop music and the other channel's doing something completely different, like rock music. And you just see these different sort of qualities of movement in absolute silence. It's quite magical. It's really
magical,
bizarre.
Really magical. Yeah,
yeah. And hysterically funny.
Yeah, it's really funny. Yeah.
They've just reminded me of something that we did as an exercise. And I wasn't facilitating this, but I was part of the group. And I can't remember who the facilitator was. But basically, we just made a small circle. And one by one, if you wanted to do it, you stood in the middle of the circle and just danced with your eyes shut silently. So the only music was just the music of the sea coming in, and it was an empty beach. It wasn't a touristy beach. So the person just moved. I'm demonstrating now, obviously nobody can see. Just moved according to whatever internal rhythm you could pick up on. Yeah. And then you were witnessed by everybody sitting around you, who then fed back afterwards and said what they saw. So you were just almost naked.
I did a similar thing in a yoga retreat, which was called Bio Danza. There was no music, and then you would dance with each other. It wasn't with eyes shut, though. You had to look into each other's soul and find each other's rhythm and all that kind of lovely stuff. But, you know, yeah, Bio Danza was just, it was a form of kind of yoga meditation in a way. It's quite magical.
Yeah.
And that's what I think is, I'm really fascinated by that place of kind of where the body is very allowed, but the voice is silent. But I do think there is something about people who are quite silent, you know, people who, I mean, I've got quite a lot of friends who are introverts and who do love silence. And I think sometimes, you know, like that Susan Cain book, Quiet, which is about the power of the introvert. I think sometimes we think it's really important that people who speak a lot, but actually it's in the silence that there's quite a lot of depth and quite a lot of really beautiful quality of thought. And I think sometimes it's in enabling that to come out, you know, because I do a lot on like assertiveness and things like that. And there's quite a lot around at the moment talking about people being quite forceful or bullyish. You know, I think sometimes that aggression can shut people down. You know, that all those words like being silenced or reduced to silence, or, you know, that closing down of people. And I think, you know, I was speaking to somebody who was managing somebody the other day, and they were saying, oh, they're just like, they don't say anything. They're just like, getting them to say anything, it's just impossible. And I do think that sometimes as women, and I suppose as everybody who's got something to say, if it's not a natural thing to want to speak up and be heard, I think sometimes we have to push ourselves out of silence to be heard and not be oppressed. So I think there is a quality of breaking through the silence sometimes as well.
So I remember there being this very quiet woman at university, and I partly was mystified by her, and partly I thought she knew stuff that the rest of us didn't. So I accorded her greater status because she was so quiet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, which, and it could have been the reverse, but I think because I've always been a chatterer, and it's, I find it easy to put myself down. So I probably thought, oh my God, she's better than me because she's quiet.
Yeah.
And forgot that actually sometimes people who speak up are more likely to be thought of as perhaps higher status. Mm. I read some statistic the other day that men think that women speak too much, but actually if you look at your average sort of board meeting, women only speak half as much as the men do, but the guys think that they speak twice as much as the men do. Because if women talk, then we're just noisy chatterboxes or nags or all of those sort of stereotypes. If you call a woman bossy, that's very negative, but sort of bossy men tends to be seen more as a sort of, you know, authoritative sort of thing to do.
I used to think the strong, silent man thing was something to aspire to, but then I began to think it was perhaps some men simply don't have anything interesting to say. Anyway, I'm interested in you saying that someone thought they needed to get their staff to talk instead of trying to understand what was going on in that silence, the thought processes that may have been taking place during those silences. They could have really been innovative or
exactly. I completely agree with you on that whole thing of, I mean, I'm fascinated by questions and what questions can do to unlock that silence in a way. I remember reading a quote by Larry King, who's like an American chat show host, and he goes, I never learned anything when I was talking, you know. And I was like, okay, you know, I never learned anything when you were talking. But actually, sometimes when you do talk, you unlock things, don't you?
Yeah.
So I think my initial style is always to sort of speak, but actually learning to be a coach and learning to listen in a different way, you realise that asking a question sometimes can break a silence much more interesting. I remember being at a party and I think this girl was really upset that she'd done something that she was feeling very bad about, you know, and I just said to her, well, if I'd done it, how would you have felt? What would you tell me if I'd done it? Rather than telling her, oh, don't feel bad about it, you know, don't, we all have done things like that. Just simply using a question to try to silence her mind in a little way so that to forgive ourselves. And I think there's something about silence and forgiveness.
Oh, the coaching has been a really good lesson for me as well, because learning to just sit and listen and be quiet myself and not offer advice and not go, oh yeah, that's happened to me as well. And just, exactly, you know, listen for, as we were talking about earlier, listen for the sort of subtle messages that you're getting.
Yes.
When you just let somebody else speak, give them permission to speak. It's a huge part of the skill of being a coach, isn't it? To shut up.
The opposite of that, like when you're presenting and you're training or something and you just stand at the front and are still, you're mentioning about stillness, if you're still and silent, then all of a sudden people go, what's she doing up there? What's going on? And then all of a sudden they become silent.
I have often taught kids, you know, I've done taught a lot of theatre to kids and done drama projects with kids. Because I wasn't trained as a teacher, it took me ages to learn that one, that you have to be quiet to get kids to shut up. Shouting over them is a fool's errand. I just I learned a trick to just stand there in the middle of the room and put my hands up and say at the top of the class, right, when I want you to be quiet, I'm just going to stand there with my arms up in the air, and that means I want you to be quiet. And then just do that, and then you don't have to lose your voice.
Yeah, I do think there is something about how we silence children, though. There is that whole thing. I remember I was at an after-school club. This was before I set my own one up. This is probably why I did it. Because I went and spoke to one of the workers that was there, and I spoke to her, and my daughter started saying something, and she just quietly put down and put her hand over my daughter's mouth.
Oh, my God.
I was silenced. I was so shocked. I do think there is something about the fact that in schools we silence our children. We make them still. And I don't, you know, especially boys who, and girls, my daughter is, loves to move. And, you know, and we silence them all the time. And I think that there is a way to make them noisy through movement. And and I think sometimes we try to silence the people that shouldn't be silenced.
They're testing things out when they're speaking when they're little. I was watching that programme last night about 4-year-olds, The Secret Life of 4-year-olds.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's just so fabulous. And the little things that they say in the gaps are amazing. You know, if you just said, okay, you can only speak in this sort of window of time, or, you know, just, you know, do what I tell you to do or whatever. Yeah. But the little random little chats that they have is where they're learning.
Yeah. I actually think that as a child, as a female, I don't know, I think we were always told to, well, maybe it's my age, I don't know, but I think we were quite often told to be silent, not to speak up, and they're reinforced in society. You know, like when I was in meetings on the Today programme, I remember, you know, it was like somebody further around with more power would say exactly the same thing. I think we're given very subtle messages to keep quiet. I was started to teach people how to become leaders. And then I thought, I'm working for somebody else. I'm working for a male company. If I'm going to do this, I've got to stop being number two and start being number one. And it's not comfortable for me, but I knew I had to do it. So it was like a conscious choice to speak up and constantly sort of almost making myself do it, you know.
There's lots of ways of having a voice as well, isn't there? Because you can obviously have a voice in a blog or a vlog or something which you've got a lot of control over, but which you can put out there and get a great audience and say what you really mean. And I mean, I've been very conscious as a theatre artist that I wanted to have my own voice, that it suddenly became clear to me that I needed to speak my own words and that I needed to talk about my own experience and my own opinions. And it took me a while to do that. And an early sort of formative thing was that I used to be in an a cappella singing group, which we formed at university. And I can't say the title on air because it was a swear word. this is a sort of post-punk time. I loved being in the in this group, but one of the guys in the group wrote all the lyrics, and he was brilliant, and I love him, and he's a friend, but he was very witty, and he wrote all the lyrics. And then I came down to London and started performing, doing cabaret and stuff in a female double act, so we had our own voice. And this singing group was continuing, but I found that I didn't want to sing somebody else's words, even if when they were really funny and good. I had enough of the sort of star about me, or the, you know, the self-motivated individual about me, that I wanted everything that I was putting out there to be my stuff. So I left the group, and even though they went on to be quite sort of popular and successful, I never regretted it, because I knew where my motivation was coming from with that I wanted to have my own expression. And I think I've been pretty true to that ever since. I'm not saying that that hasn't got me into trouble, because sometimes I haven't collaborated when I could have done, because I haven't wanted to share the expression. You know, I haven't wanted to put out a combined voice. I just wanted to keep having my own voice. And I think I'm attached to that. And maybe partly it's about being a woman and having felt a bit like I didn't have a voice earlier on. But I think it's just a sort of hunger in me to say what I feel, which does mean that I have to keep feeding myself. You know, I can't just sit at home and then hope I've got something to say just from staring at the TV all day. You know, I do need to get stimuli all the time. So something like this is absolutely wonderful, to have this opportunity to share with you guys and realise how much collaboration does produce an extraordinary conversation. I love the way that conversations like this just trigger really random things. I suddenly remembered a stand-up comic who is now a famous playwright and director called Patrick Marber. And when I used to do stand-up years ago, I watched him a few times, and he did this great set where he would do a bit of material, sort of get the audience laughing a bit, and then he would suddenly just go quiet, and then he would sit and wait for people to laugh. And they did. And then he'd go, there we are, there's a laugh there. And he wouldn't say anything else, he wouldn't crack a joke. And then the laughter would just start rippling until the whole audience just started laughing. And he didn't do anything except the odd little comment. All right, there's another laugh. And they would just start laughing more than they did at any of his genuine material. And it was a bit like people abhor a vacuum. And they were laughing at the ridiculousness of a stand-up comic standing there and not telling any jokes.
Laughter is just so contagious, isn't it? And a great antidote to silence as well.
Yeah.
Right, so, and I'm very sorry to do this, but I need to bring this to an end. I said right at the beginning, is silence golden or uncomfortable? Now that we've discussed it, how do we feel about silence? Do we need it, or do we need to fill it?
Yeah, really noticing how much more I want it now I'm getting older, you know. I'm middle-aged. People go, oh, ridiculous, you're still young. Nonsense. I know how old I am. I know how long I've been around. I know how I appreciate silence more now, and how in a day, most days, if I can, if I'm working from home, I'll just have a little turn around the park and do a little mindful walk, just looking at things, listening to the bird sound, and not letting my internal rattle go on too much. So I need it more and more. So I think silence is golden in that regard. But I'm also loving it that with all the stuff that's been going on recently with the sexual harassment claims, that women are no longer being silent. And so that's another issue, but that's hugely important to me.
Oh, I completely agree with all that you said there. Silence golden? Well, for me, the enriching silence is golden and the oppression of silence is not. So I'll want to do more of the enriching one, I think.
Thank you very much, Kate Farragher, Alison Goldie and Susie Hackney. A great conversation. Thank you so much. Really enjoyed that.
Thank you. Thanks, Shirley.
Thanks. The Lush Speakeasy with Kate Farragher, Alison Goldie and Susie Hackney. Kate's Bespoke Skills, which delivers bespoke training, coaching and consultancy to the financial and business community, can be found online at bespokeskills.com. Alison is online at alisongoldie.com, and you can buy her well-reviewed The Improv book direct from the site. Susie is on Instagram at Susie Hackney and has contributed to many articles on the Lush website. Thank you very much for listening. If you'd like to hear more from Lush, and our ever-growing archive contains interviews, debates and stories with a wide range of charities, organisations and individuals, please download the free Lush Player app, which is available for both Android and Apple.